This is Dumb Down Life number 130. Good evening, Darren.
Good evening, Lance. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, pretty good, thank you. How are you?
I'm not too bad. I just had a thought.
You be careful.
Did the Apple thing, was that announced before the last show?
What Apple thing?
You know, the Apple Watch and the iPhone 6 and all that. Was that even...
Yeah.
Did we discuss it last week?
Yeah.
Do you not
listen to our shows?
Well, yeah, but generally the day after, and I've forgotten it by the day after that.
Yes, I think it was the day or the day before. It was on a Wednesday and we recorded on a Thursday? I don't know. But yes, it had happened and we did discuss it because we were talking about the watches and then the Apple Watch and then talked about our watches because they work and stuff. But I think we've covered watches particularly well just recently, haven't we?
Well, but before we close that subject off for a while.
Okay.
How's it been getting on?
What, my watch?
Yeah.
Awesome.
With the phone?
Awesome.
Anything new? Any?
Not really, no. I've just been using it as I've been using it, but it's been performing perfectly, as it should. Although the battery life does seem to be down to about 3 days rather than four.
Oh, down to 3 days. I think in the world of wearable technology, 3 days is pretty good.
I'm not complaining.
No, I'm still only getting the 1 day out of mine, but that's more because I'm still sort of playing with it and showing it around. And
yeah, I think I've calmed down with the playing thing and I'm now just using.
I possibly get more notifications than you as well because it's tied in with the work email and the work
I thought you were going
service.
To say you were more popular than me for a moment.
Oh, goodness, no. No, I tend to be wandering around the office and get an email notification on the watch so that I know not to go back to my desk but to wander off to somebody else's desk and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it does get quite a heavy lot of use. There's a lot of talking on the internets about whether these are a fad or whether they're going to catch on or whether there's any proper use for them. But certainly for me, sort of having...
The same was said about television, the same was said about iPads.
Yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, the watches so far don't really add anything to what having a phone can do. But for me, it makes it a little bit, that tiny bit more convenient.
It's a convenience thing more than an absolute need, isn't it?
Yeah, and depending on how you use your phone, a lot of people turn all the notifications on their phone off.
Really?
And they purely pull them out when they want, when they've got nothing to do, or on a routine when they want to see what's going on, rather than having the phone constantly buzzing in their pocket.
Wow.
So for those sort of people, one of these watches is absolutely a waste of time.
Yeah.
Time watch.
Uh-huh.
Time. But, yes, okay, well, we'll limit it to that then, for the phones. And that was Phones and Watches.
You're listening to Dumbed Down Life.
Right, so we'll change track from science-y stuff and watchy, phony type stuff. Well, I suppose this kind of stays in with watches and phones.
I thought you were just going to start talking about the comet and then, you know, we could finish the show up within 10 minutes.
What's happened with the comet? Oh, they've picked a landing site, haven't they? That's right.
They've picked a landing... Yeah, is this not one of your subjects for later on?
No, it isn't, no.
We'll cover that now then.
Yes, yes, they've narrowed their shortlist for five down to two, a primary and a backup. I don't know how they come up with the designations, but they've chosen to land on site C.
Oh, it was C, because it was J was the one.
Sorry, other way around then. They're landing on site J. And then site C is their backup. But as they only had five, I don't think J is the fifth letter of the alphabet, is it? So I don't know how they came up with the designations. But, they seem to think that they're going to need an awful lot of luck for it to land safely.
The thing is, and... Now, this is bad research on our behalf because I think that what we've been doing is seeing the headlines, reading the web pages on it must be news. What's the news round? Because it we're not really getting that much information. A little bit of digging in this week, and what I found. We were talking when we first started talking about this. We were talking about how they weren't sure how much gravity there was going to be, and yet this satellite that was launched 10 years ago has got harpoon and drilled feet designed to land on a surface that's got very little gravity. So they weren't actually that surprised to find that it has very little gravity.
Gravity, yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. It's going to be interesting, and it's going to be a recurring subject, I'm sure. But it's
Well,
certainly getting closer and closer.
yeah, well, a little pickup again when they actually start launching the lander, won't it?
Which is going to be November?
I think so. I think so, yeah.
There's me saying that
I'm
leading up on
totally unprepared for this because I wasn't planning on
Brilliant.
talking
That's right.
about it, so.
That's fine. And it's only that I saw sort of the article about it and showing you sort of the size of the thing. The lander itself is going to be about, the lander itself is rather about 1 meter square,
Yeah, it's not
I think
very
it is.
big, is it?
Yeah. I'm only going by the fact that the model was 0.5 meter square, so the and that was half scale, so yeah. So yeah, it's going to fire out this tiny little bit. Again, I thought it was going to be the entire thing sort of lands on the comet,
No.
but no, it's just a tiny particle of it that comes out.
Fillet or something it's called.
Is that because it's the guts of the satellite?
No, it's some Roman or Greek god thing, I believe.
Ah.
In the same way as the Rosetta is a link to that's just a stone, isn't it? The Rosetta Stone is
Well,
placed.
say to me Rosetta, and I'm always thinking of these language courses.
Well, you know why, don't you? Do you know why they're called, why Rosetta Stone is called Rosetta Stone?
No.
Right. And again, I don't know the whole facts, so I might get this wrong, but the essence of it is, I believe it was some archaeologists found a huge block of stone when excavating some Egyptian pyramids.
Right.
And on there was a translation from hieroglyphics to Greek.
Right.
And as we knew the Greek language, we could decipher the Greek and thus decipher the
Egyptian
hieroglyphics.
writers.
So
Ah.
Rosetta Stone became, they sort of poached
Synonymous
that
with,
as
yeah.
a translation, yeah, and languages.
That's clever. There you learn something new every day.
I'd say I might have got it wrong. It might not be Greek, it might be Latin. I'm not entirely sure, but the essence of it is that.
Yeah. So, sorry, Lance, what was it you wanted to talk about?
It kind of stays with phones because what I'm going to talk about is used on phones and tablets and PCs. Microsoft have bought Minecraft.
Go on then. What, how, where, why, when?
Right. Microsoft have bought Mojang, the
Yep.
company that owns and has created Minecraft, for £1.5 billion, which is
1.5 billion pounds.
billion pounds, yeah, which is $2.5 billion.
Dollars. That's right. I knew there's a 2.5 came into it somewhere.
Yeah. Not sure. Do you play Minecraft? I don't think you do you?
Well, I'm sort of. I'm getting there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When we went out to
Too
Turkey,
late.
when we went out, well, yeah, when we went out to Turkey, we put Minecraft on the tablets, and the girls were quite happily playing Minecraft together. And of course, I got roped into it and was playing as well. What I'm also looking at is we're going to be replacing our Raspberry Pi with a proper television box thing in the
Oh,
near
really?
future. And when we do that, the Raspberry Pi is possibly going to become a Minecraft server. So we'll,
Ooh.
yeah, the you can script along using Perl, you can script produce stuff in Minecraft.
Okay.
Now, As you've been on Minecraft a little longer than I have, you've no doubt watched some of these YouTube videos.
Oh, Stampy Cat.
Pass. What I've seen the last couple of days was Westeros,
yes,
recreated in Minecraft, Helm's Deep, you know, all of any fictional world you can think of. And I think there's also been a project to recreate Denmark in its entirety.
By the Danish government, I believe.
Exactly, yeah. And to which they forgot to disable the TNT blocks.
Oops.
And the Germans came over. Yeah, but it was vandalised. I'm not sure whether it was how it was dealt with and whether it was...
Some of the stuff people have built on there is phenomenal.
So what I'm looking at is that those things are surely they've not been built one block at a time.
I don't know. I because I didn't know that you could script, I assumed they were. But from what you've said, that's possibly not entirely true.
What I don't know is what level of involvement the scripting is, whether the scripting is simply
creating resources for them to build with or something.
Well, no, I'm thinking like the old, you know, the little turtle things that we had in BBC Model Bs, where you would say, go forward, put down the green pen, turn left, go forward, left green pen, turn.
Big track.
Yeah. Is that all that the scripting can do with Minecraft? Go forward, place a
block of stone, or
right, place a block of, and is that what it's limited to, or can we say place a 10 by 10 block of
I don't know.
So this is something I'm interested in learning, because your old days of 10 print hello 20 you'd end up with a screen full of the word hello, great. But if you can draw out onto a piece of paper how you want your ice castle to look, and then you can write it into a script, and then you can
but surely writing the script would take almost as, if it's something as complicated as Westeros, surely writing the script would take just as long as physically going out and mining the stuff within the game.
You write a script that says this is the script to create a house.
Then you replicate that house. But building the king's castle or something, I mean, once you've done that, written the script for that, you might just as well have built it.
I don't know.
Personally, I wouldn't want to script it, though, because half the whole point and the fun of it is building it.
This is where, like I say, I don't know what
In essence, it's a cheat code, isn't it?
Yes and no. It's a way of learning.
I suppose. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. I'll give you that.
Write scripts.
Yeah. It's a learning tool for scripting, which is the point, rather than the point is to play Minecraft and build stuff. It's a means to an end, isn't it? Yeah. I can see that.
I mean, if you were to want to create the town you live in, then the art part would be in creating the first house of the row. And then the script simply says, and do that for the rest of the road.
Road, yeah.
So you've still got the enjoyment of the artisticness of creating the house. But then you don't go, right, now I've got to create 10,000 of these houses for this area. You can simply lay them out. And then you get the enjoyment of walking down your street and getting that aspect of it and with zombies and whatever.
So how much of this is going to change now Microsoft have bought it?
Well, this is the thing. If they take something on like this and then change it, it loses its appeal and people stop using it, and therefore it loses its value.
And also, if they take it and don't continue to develop, then you've lost the interest to a point there as well.
But much development does it need? Because isn't it a plain field into which you want people to build their own stuff.
But there was continual development with new blocks and new ways of blocks interacting with other blocks.
Right.
When it first came out, I mean, I don't know if you've seen, because Minecraft's been in the news a lot, there's been pages that show you the cool stuff people have built in Minecraft.
Yeah.
So have you seen the fully working
automatic 16, playing piano?
Have you seen the fully working 16-bit computer?
Yep.
Right. You couldn't do that when Minecraft initially came out. There's no such thing as redstone.
Right.
And then they created redstone that you put a pressure pad on and whatever, and you can make slidey Star Trek doors.
Yeah.
And then they made it be able to do something else, and then something else, and something else. And people have sort of worked out the logic of how it works and built really complicated stuff.
Yeah.
And just recently, they've added new types of blocks, new animals. I mean, there's wolves and dogs and stuff that you can tame and things like that now. So they're continually developing, giving other stuff to do that you can do, rather than just mining stone and building castles.
Yeah.
And will Microsoft continue to develop that? Will they bring it in with, oh yeah, we've developed all these new blocks, but give us another £2 and you can have them in-app purchases, basically. Will they do that?
Well, I'm not sure why they've bought it. I mean,
because it made $100 million last year.
Last year, sure.
Mm.
But also,
and it did the year before.
But there's also very popular after-school clubs, and it's being used as an educational tool.
Yeah.
So they could develop it in that way, or they could use that as a way into schools. They could use it as a way of trying to get more people onto Skype, or as a way of getting more people into.
So they'll build in Skype into Microsoft so you can talk to the people you're playing with through Skype built into the. Yeah, okay.
There's all sorts of things they could have in mind. And I think that simply trying to monetize it beyond the way it already is.
I mean, there's two ways they can go, isn't there? A land grab, a money grab, basically, and kill it. So whack in loads of stuff, people pay loads of money, then get disillusioned and walk away, but Microsoft has still made an absolute fortune.
Mm.
Or go long term and just keep developing it, and people will keep buying it.
Yeah. So I struggle with what the appeal is. Perhaps I'm just only slowly picking this up.
I mean, I tend not to play very much on my own. But me and my daughter will spend a couple of hours, 2-3 hours a weekend when she comes down, just doing stuff and silly stuff. We're building houses, we're going out hunting zombies and stuff, and it's something me and my daughter play together.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the appeal for me. She likes to play on the tablet, and I like to play with her. So that's where my appeal is, but I don't often sit here on my own, what can I build? I kind of feel it's more of a social thing. If you get a server running and it's able to connect out to the internet, then I would quite happily play with you.
Well, that is one of the things that before the Microsoft thing that was talking about, they are, I think they've already got in beta, is the cloud-based server.
No, it's not in beta. That's out. They do a thing called a Realm, which you subscribe and pay, give a monthly payment to.
For mobile?
For the mobile, probably not. No, but I've got the PC version as well.
Right.
And the PC version, there's Realms, where I think it's like $8 or $9, pretty much the same as any other online subscription game. It's about $10 a month. And the data for your world is stored on Mojang servers. So you can connect anywhere you like, and you can have up to 10 people registered into that realm, of which 5 or 6 can be in at any point in time.
Doesn't that sound like a lot?
No, it doesn't, but I think that's what it is. It's not a lot. Maybe it's more. I know there's only a limited amount of people that can be in the world at any one time. Mm. But yeah, so that's where these things like Westeros come from. That would be a realm stored on Mojang servers, and a gang of people essentially will be building that between them.
But only a limited, only like 10 people.
At any given point, as in, you know, like when we used to play Counter-Strike, maximum people was 8 people in the game at any point in time.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
But when you look at something like Second Life,
when there's millions,
well, I wouldn't, I'm sure there's not millions, but yes, there's certainly, I've been in environments where there's been hundreds.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they've limited it. Maybe it's just to, I don't know, make sure it works properly or something. I don't really know.
Hmm.
But yeah, there is only a small amount of people that are in there at any point in time.
Okay. Well, we shall watch this with interest.
Hmm.
Toes up to the fire, and I will sing you.
And that was Josh Woodward with California Lullaby. So there's been voting today. As you're listening to this, there was voting the other day. Up north.
No, they're not voting today.
Oh, is it tomorrow?
Yeah. Today is the last day of campaigning.
Campaigning. Okay. There's been voting on Thursday.
Friday. Oh, hang on. What day are we?
Today's the last day of campaigning. Tomorrow, which is Thursday, is the voting. And then I'm not convinced of that.
Hang on.
I'm not convinced. I thought the voting was today.
Scottish referendum.
Scottish referendum. And I have two topics related to Scotland.
Right. Scottish referendum takes place on Thursday, the 18th of December. So that's tomorrow.
Right. Okay. And depending on the outcome of this vote, Scotland either stays or leaves the United Kingdom. Yes?
Yes.
There is a particular well-known article that represents the United Kingdom.
Yes, I think I know where you're going.
Yeah. Union flag. What happens to that if Scotland were to leave the UK?
I suppose technically you'd lose the blue and the white, the blue background and the white cross.
So if you lose the blue background and the white cross, you end up with
A white background with a red cross.
Well, with two red crosses?
No.
Well, we don't, because the white background with the red cross is England.
Yes. See, this is the thing. Wales is not particularly well represented in the Union flag, and neither is Northern Ireland.
So where does the red diagonal cross come from?
Oh, wait, hang on. Because the Welsh flag is the...
Is the dragon.
Is the green and white with the red dragon over it.
So there's all sorts of different ideas.
So is the
around.
Other cross just an allusion to the fact that there's red in the Welsh flag? Because there's no green, is there?
Well, that's the thing. There's a suggestion that perhaps if Scotland were to leave the Union, that we have red, white and green.
Mm.
Or red, white and half green. To sort of better
bring the Welsh
represent
in.
The Welsh flag.
I think you'll find what will happen is absolutely nothing.
As in they're not going to leave us?
Well, that is my personal thought, yes. But I think should they stay, should they go, they won't change the flag one bit. It's too ingrained in being Britain.
Interesting.
You can argue for the elements that make that flag up are representative of the member countries, and if one of those countries leave, it shouldn't be there, but that flag is representative of Britain.
But we have seen flags change as
the Union flag has changed over the years, so it's not unreasonable an assumption that it would change, but I personally don't think it will.
I think it would be interesting to see it change. I could see it becoming one of these Blue Peter goes out to all the schools. And I would much rather see a flag that had been redesigned by the schools and by the youth.
Rather than
it going to some big advertising campaign.
You know who's
like, what on earth is that?
No, it won't be an ad. You know what it'll be, don't you?
Go on.
It'll be Simon Cowell.
What? He is the flag?
Yeah. No, it'll be...
Britain's Got Flags?
Or the Flag Factor or something.
No, I'm just looking at the mess that they made of the Olympic
Oh, God, yes.
Banners and flags and things where it's all very stylized. And what we need is a modern flag that represents...
Modern
no, we
Britain.
Don't.
Yeah, no, we don't. No, we don't. Not at all. No.
But it would also give an opportunity to sell new flags and to sell new merchandise and to make collectibles of the old stuff. So I'm not sure that, you know, just carry on would be the right thing to do necessarily.
Well, you see, you've got another point there as well. Aside from the flag, the UK banknotes, regardless of whether Scotland choose to use the pound or not, on the back of the banknotes have famous British people throughout history. And isn't there some Scots on the back of some of our notes?
But then they would continue to have been
they
British
part of the
when
Union
they
at
were
the point,
at the
I
time.
Suppose. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So that kind of stays. I did see on one of the faux news websites that some group of people had set up passport checkpoints at the border with England and Scotland.
I mean, technically, there should be.
If Scotland's going to remain part of Europe, then it's not as critical. But
there's still them if you go over to France.
Well, actually, passport checkpoints, yeah, but not between areas of land. There isn't always.
There'd need to be a customs and excise, wouldn't there?
I don't know.
Mm.
So come Saturday, we'll find out how this is all going to fall into place.
How quickly will it happen? Because obviously they're not going to, assuming they vote yes, it's not Saturday suddenly they're a new country, is it? There's obviously a process to go through. So are you aware of the timeline?
It's going to depend what they want, isn't it? If they want, you know, if they want out of this and out of that and out of the other, then we're likely to say, well, go on then. Give it a go. And then when you've had enough and you can't do it, then come back.
Yeah.
Well, the example that I saw today was Czechoslovakia.
Yes.
When Slovak and the Czech split into two separate countries,
yeah.
This was done without a vote. It was purely the head of the country said, you know, this is what's going to happen. And it was a mess. It was a complete mess.
Yeah.
And but with them, the option was either this or war.
Yes.
So
yeah.
The splitting in their case was very painful. But then a few years down the line, everybody looks back at it and says, but it was necessary.
Yeah.
I don't think that we're likely to go to war with Scotland if we weren't to have this vote.
No. I wonder how many people you could re-employ rebuilding Hadrian's Wall.
So my second Scottish subject, which I'm surprised we haven't brought up yet, the new Doctor Who.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. Because he's Scottish.
Are you completely up to date with this?
Let me think. I believe so, yeah. I think I watched one Sunday night. I watched Listen was the last one.
Yeah, Listen was the last one.
Yeah.
So what do you think?
I really like him.
I like him. I still don't like Clara.
You see, I like Clara.
No. I thought that the first episode where he's like, oh, I'm Scottish. Oh, the eyebrows. Yeah. That was brilliant. And I'm really liking him. Wasn't a big fan of Listen.
Trying to remember what happens in Listen.
It was
spoilers.
If just in case you haven't seen the Doctor Who episode yet, we are going to be talking about the episode.
I kind of liked the twists in it, but I don't like quite how integral they've made Clara to the Doctor's history. Because at the end of it. When she goes back to him as a child, the things that she does essentially pushes him into becoming who he became.
Who he became, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I didn't like that it all seemed to be just based on a whim. You know, he's he stood there and just simply gesticulates that when you're talking to yourself, it's because there's somebody else there. It's like, oh, really? That's not the cry for help that you normally get, or the accidental landing on a planet that you normally.
I think that's what I liked about it, because it was different. It wasn't a monster of the week, like you say, land on a thing, oh, there's some weird stuff going on, it's a monster, let's sort it out. It was something slightly more intangible.
I think it was an attempt to make those people who aren't scared of the stuff under the bed scared of stuff under the bed.
It's to get you back behind the sofa.
Which didn't really work. Not obviously because I'm 43, not 12. but it just seemed to be an attempt at being scary without there being anything scary. So that it would.
But aren't those the best kind of scary, the things that are all in your head? Rather, I've always found a good horror movie to be ones with it where you don't see the monster.
Well, the best scaries for me in modern Who are the Weeping Angels.
Yes, absolutely. But I think because you don't
see, with them, it's because you don't see anything gory.
Mm.
Which, you know, in that way is right. You're not seeing anything gory happening. You're not seeing them do anything scary, but just don't blink. Great. Yeah. But the whole premise of Listen, where there is something under the bed, or is there? Ooh.
I liked it because you spent the whole episode. I suppose you could look at it as a bit of an anticlimax, but you spent the whole episode waiting for that thing under the bed to come up. Mm. And it never did, because it turns out there wasn't anything, which I suppose you could read as an anticlimax, but I kind of liked it.
I tell you what, though, if I was a young boy and a feminine hand grabbed my ankle and said, get back into bed. In a female voice, I'm not sure I'd be scared anymore.
Hi, this is Scott Segler, author of the novels Infected and Contagious, and you are listening to Dumb Down Life.
So we talked about this leading up to last weekend, and having just spoken about telly, have you had a chance to watch the Formula E race, sir?
Yes, I have.
What's the funny? What did I miss?
I lack of preparation for this week's show, and I really thought I had very little to talk about. And of course, yeah, I watched the Formula E race. It totally slipped my mind that I'd done it. I've had a very busy week at work, to be fair, and my brain's a bit like soup. So,
No change there.
Yes, I did, and I enjoyed every single minute of it.
Now, I started watching it on Saturday morning. And nobody else in the house was awake at the time. And then slowly, because we had the girls this weekend, slowly people came down while I was watching the race. What was a big interest with this race, which we don't get with Formula One, is because it had the little lap counter in the corner saying that there was X amount of laps out of 25 left. It was like, oh, it's only 25 laps. Yes. Oh, I'll watch that then. And
yes.
I ended up with people sitting there watching it with me. Whereas the Formula One,
it's 60 odd laps.
How many more laps? Right, yeah. And the complete lack of interest. Mm. So, yeah, a couple of people sat there watching the race with me. And granted, they were all like, oh, so they're going around the corner again. Wow, they're going around the corner again. And how fast can they go? 135 miles an hour. Is that it? Well, that's what they're limited to. They're limited. Why are they limited to it?
So, well, the batteries last longer.
Yeah. Why are they making that funny noise? Because they're electric. Mm. Yeah. And it's,
yeah.
But the fact that it was a shorter race meant that people were more interested to put the time into it.
Plus, I think the drivers had to race more. Or try to, because they've only got so many laps to actually gain places.
They had to race more because of that. They were all in the same car, therefore it was more of a driver competition than a car competition. And the track itself, it's very strange the way that the Formula E website is working. I can't easily find the circuits.
No, I couldn't.
I'm not sure if they're even on there. Even looking to see what the circuit was for the race that they've just had, I couldn't find it on the website. Which, okay, well, maybe it's just an oversight, but or it might be a badly designed website.
So yeah, I mean, I wasn't that impressed with the circuit. In that it seemed like a lot of left turns with a chicane in it.
Yeah, a lot of left turns with a chicane in it.
It was pretty much a square, wasn't it? But from what I could gather, it was more or less a square with one long straight with a couple of bends in it, a couple of chicanes in it to give them something to do.
Now, one of the problems with street circuits, and it's not, you know, it's only because we've had years of Formula One that this became blatantly obvious, is camera placing.
Mm.
You couldn't get that nice long shot of it coming of the cars coming down an Essing
what?
Essing.
Sorry.
A long shot of cars weaving left and right, coming towards the camera, and then going around a long narrow curve. You've got a quick shot of a car coming towards you. And then the 90-degree corner and a quick shot of a car disappearing before. And it wasn't very well covered by cameras, I don't think.
I'm guessing. I mean, this is the first time they've done a street circuit or that circuit ever, I think.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing as the season progresses, the powers that be will look at that and think, well, how can we improve that?
Yeah.
And it may be down to the city that they're doing it in, because I mean it was in Beijing, wasn't it?
Yep.
And that looked a fairly heavily built up area that they were racing in.
Yep.
So I'm guessing they were fairly restricted in what they could do.
They will be in any city though, surely, because that's the thing with racing in the streets. You don't have the big runoff areas and the huge
if you're doing it somewhere that is slightly more of an open city, and not all cities are just skyscrapers, then they may be able to do more with it. I don't know where they're doing the London. Are they doing the London circuit around the Olympic Park?
This is my fear. I don't want them to.
No, I'd rather see them going blatting past Tower Bridge and stuff. But
yeah,
I suspect, and I think I've read, that they're going to do it in the Olympic Park.
That would make sense for availability. It's going to be easier for them to do that.
There'll be less of London to close off to do it. Well, that park is slightly more open, so I'm guessing they'll be able to put better cameras in there. In America, those roads are really big.
Yeah.
They're much wider roads than you had in Beijing. So they may be able to set up traveling cameras and crane cameras and stuff there. So I think that very much depends on the city that they're doing it in.
Yeah.
And again, like I say, this was the first one that they've done. They'll look at it and go, well, we need to improve that. How can we? And sort of adjust it as they go on.
Because I don't know about you, but having seen the races from the track side, or having seen the cars from the track side, the vivid colours and the reflective colouring of the Virgin car and all that sort of thing, very prominent, very obvious. When you're looking at these cars nose on, as a lot of the shots were, it wasn't as obvious, and you were relying a lot more on the helmet colour to tell who's doing what.
Yeah.
The quality wasn't fantastic.
Well, of the cameras, I thought that.
I wasn't sure, because we're spoilt now and watch a lot of the stuff in HD. And unfortunately, we don't have access to ITV4 HD. So we were watching this live on the standard resolution.
But I mean,
and it seemed to be very pixely. A lot of the times, the thing that shows you the speed and the power usage and all that was at some points that was unreadable.
It's illegible, yeah. But I also noticed that specifically around where the chicanes and that were, the picture was breaking up.
Oh, right. No, I didn't notice that.
Whether that was just, I think I was streaming it.
Right.
Because I watched it Sunday night. So whether my broadband connection wasn't, it was having a moment or something and it wasn't streaming particularly well, I don't know. But it did break up quite a few times.
Hmm. And technology aside, because we've spoken mostly about technology here, that last lap.
yes, absolutely. It was... Well, I'll tell you what it reminded me of, much more than a Formula One, because the cars look like Formula One cars. There's no getting away from it. Formula One cars with a few extra bits on and a few things taken away. But the race played out much more like a touring car race.
Right.
Now, you've been to touring car races with me. There's some argy-bargy going on at the beginning of the race where people are jostling for position. It kind of settles down. There's a couple of changes of position throughout the race. But you get down to the last two laps and everybody's just going for it, and that's when the excitement happens. And that's pretty much how this played out. I mean, that last lap where who was it? It was Prost and Heidfeld, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Heidfeld hunted Prost down three, four laps before, from 4 seconds behind, got it up to, well, being able to go by him on the last corner of the race.
Yeah.
Well, Prost didn't really like that, did he?
Well, see, from what I saw, and I've not watched it over and over again since, so I might be wrong, but it looked like Heidfeld had left it too late.
No.
I don't think that had Prost... I'm not sure that Prost had anywhere to go other than off the track or into him.
No, he had plenty of options.
Did he?
Yes.
Okay.
The road was wide enough to have three cars on it.
Right.
Heidfeld was alongside, if not a nose ahead of him.
Yeah.
And Prost just steered left. If you actually look at it from inside the car, he looked to his right. They replayed it from sort of the camera that sits above the driver's cockpit. He looked to the right. Heidfeld wasn't there, so he chose just to steer left.
Oh, okay. Which, so he didn't look to the left. He looked to the right and then steered left.
Yeah. And there was plenty of room for the pair of them to slow down and get around the corner. Prost just got it either deliberately wrong or made one hell of a mistake.
Was there any kind of investigation into it?
Yeah, he's got a 10-place grid penalty for the next race for causing an avoidable accident. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't think he deliberately set out to hit him. I do think he deliberately sort of jerked his car over to the left to sort of unsettle Heidfeld into sort of braking and pulling out of the manoeuvre. Completely misjudged it and just literally sideswiped him.
Yeah.
I don't think it was intentional, but he did cause the accident.
But the accident itself, that was heart-stopping.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm amazed Heidfeld got out of that and ran.
It was interesting to see that he got out of it, and there was no leaking fuel, there was no fires, there was... And the marshals came up and rolled it back over what was left of it.
Yeah. That did cross my mind when it was lying upside down and what have you, that, yes, there is no fuel to go, but these batteries, do they have battery fluid in them, or are they just a complete solid thing?
I don't understand how the
batteries... Are they basically the same technology as a mobile phone battery, but just a lot bigger?
I believe so.
Right, okay.
And the big fear of that is that if you hit a mobile phone with a ball hammer, it will go bang.
Oh, will it?
Yes. Oh, yes. That's something to have a look at on YouTube.
Yeah, I shall be later.
Don't try that at home, folks. But yeah, if you... short them, if you hit them, there's all sorts of things that will make a lithium battery rather nasty. So this is why
for fire lighting at scouts.
Well, this is why they've insisted that the battery is part of the structure of the car and it's not something that can be removed.
Right.
And it is so well protected. So when it comes down to it, you've possibly got the heat that's going to be in the brake structure.
Yeah.
It's possibly
on the drive train. I mean, you've got the spinning gearbox and everything. It still uses gears. Yeah.
But does that get hot?
Oh, it's friction, isn't it? So it will do.
I guess it does, yeah.
It's still got a drive shaft that's spinning around at 7,000 revs a minute.
You've not got the hot exhaust.
Okay, you haven't got an engine that's sitting there at a couple of hundred degrees. No, yeah. You haven't. No, fine.
Which is what's more frightening when you've got a car that's upside down.
But having said that...
And suddenly bits are falling onto the engine.
Having said that, the motor itself, that will generate some heat, won't it? I mean, you've used Scale Extric before. The engines in the motors in those cars get incredibly hot. And they are essentially just really big Scale Extric cars.
So, the question for your next recording,
yes.
Mr. Goodman.
Yes.
The heat that's generated in a Formula E car, where are the hot spots? And how hot are we talking? Are we talking about hot spots that could start a fire, had an accident, ended up sort of slightly different to the way it did?
Challenge accepted.
So you can't complain about not having something to talk about next week.
We're going to have to come up with a jingle for Ask Lance, aren't we? Maybe I have to write one on my ukulele.
Sorry. You could write one on your... So you have a ukulele and this is something you weren't going to talk about.
Do I have a ukulele? Yes.
It's turned out nice again, hasn't it?
I shall be going cleaning some windows.
So I think that is as good a place as any.
I think so.
And thank you for listening, and hear you again? No, talk to you again next week.
You can call the Dumbed Down Life crew on 07-092-274-759.
You can follow us on Twitter. Our account name is Dumbed Down Life.
The email address is ddl.podshow@gmail.com. The website address is www.dumbdownlife.com.